and welcome to Unquestionably Nerdy, the show where we talk about everything that makes us want to geek out, freak out, and kill them all. They're dead. Every single one of them. And not just the men, but the women and the children, too. They were animals, and I slaughter them like animals. I hate them. I am one of your hosts, Kadam MacArthur, and whom am I joined by?
Of course, you're joined by your other host with the most, your favorite color commentator, and one who honestly didn't understand this reference. I don't know what's happening today. Cole Browning.
Surprised you wouldn't get that reference, even if you don't know the topic of the episode. Hi, Cole. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm still trying to rack my brain. I mean, when I hear the words kill them all, the first thing I think of is the first Metallica album, but I realize, you know, very hastily produced, kind of raw-sounding thrash metal from the mid-1980s isn't something I feel like we'd both do an episode on. So, what have you decided to give us today?
No, yeah, you got it. You're right, actually. We're talking about that album in particular. Do you want to get us started?
Yes. If you didn't know, The Four Horsemen was the Metallica song. But the music was written by Dave Mustaine. And that's your fun fact, is that Megadeth has another song that uses the same music as the Four Horsemen Metallica song, and I forgot what that song is called.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another song, and they play it at about somewhere between 1.5 and like 2 times speed, the part. But it is a very popular Megadeth song.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the biggest thing I could think of about that album. And then also, very raw-sounding thrash metal. The best sounding thrash metal.
Yeah, nice. Well, good episode. I feel like we really got to every inch of that topic. Now we can move on to the second episode for this recording. And today we're going to talk about, for this second episode, is the Star Wars prequels. Do you get the reference yet?
Nope.
No? Okay. Well, you'll get there. Maybe you didn't like that part of the prequels. Because in particular, the topic we're going to talk about in regards to the prequels is a similar subject to what I did during one of the solo episodes where I talked about what I still enjoy about Game of Thrones despite the ending of the show. Instead, we're going to talk about what we still enjoy about the Star Wars prequel trilogy. Because I feel like throughout the course of our early childhood, it was the popular thing to lambast the Star Wars prequels and say how bad they were, and say how talk about all the bad performances and the bad effects and the bad writing and the bad characters and blah, blah.
But then the sequels came out.
And people had something new to complain about and reflect fondly on in their childhood with nostalgia.
Yeah, that I'm glad that the prequels are still here, given that the sequels exist. They really needed to still be there.
We could do another episode on the sequel trilogy, but that's for the future. Because I think we all have opinions on the prequel, on the sequel trilogy.
We will do an episode, loyal viewers, for the sequel trilogy in the future. However, we wanted to start out with one, I guess, that didn't bring us depression.
Well, rewatching Attack of the Clones did something to me, but we'll get to our thoughts specifically on the prequel trilogy in the individual episodes within this episode. But first off, we're going to start off with reactions from the general populace. Cole, do you have any knowledge of people's thoughts on the prequels when they were first coming out?
I don't have much knowledge. However, this was a question that scored me third place in a Star Wars-themed May the 4th bar trivia. I do know that the Rotten Tomatoes scores for each of the prequels goes with Revenge of the Sith at the top, followed by The Phantom Menace, followed by Attack of the Clones.
Correct.
So I know
I do have those listed.
I know that's the critic response, and I think that's the general audience response as well, is that we all look at Revenge of the Sith quite fondly. We definitely look at Attack of the Clones as the worst one.
Generally, yeah.
And then we look at The Phantom Menace as a complete failure because George Lucas decided not to follow through with Darth Binks, the greatest franchise-spanning villain that could have ever been. But then he just decided, no, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lack of courage. If he had done it, he would have gone down as whatever movie came out with Darth Jar Jar, Darth Binks, whatever you want to call it, would have won Oscars. It would have been better than Return of the King. I would have basically bought every single collectible item or like special edition of that movie ever. That's all I know, is there's the order and that he never followed through with Jar Jar Binks, the single greatest character that could have been, but he let everybody's negative response to The Phantom Menace take it off. Those are my big takeaways as a whole.
Yeah. We'll never truly know what we could have had, but we do know what reviews these movies had. In particular, when the movies were first coming out, when they were first announced, of course, everybody was excited. Everybody was thrilled that we were getting more Star Wars. Duh. Obviously, it's the biggest franchise in the world. Rewatching, like, the news interviews of the premiere when Phantom Menace first came out, there are lines of people in costumes and makeup and people just reciting how excited they are to see more Star Wars for the first time ever, more mainline movies from this franchise, and not just the Christmas special, which George Lucas hopes you can just forget about it. My favorite comment in particular from these comments is, there's no way it's going to be a disappointment, from one unlucky moviegoer at the Phantom Menace premiere.
Oh no.
Or not premiere, maybe like midnight premiere or whatever. But overall, weirdly enough, when the movies first came out, there was a lot of like initial positive reception. Like everybody loved the movie when it first came out, and maybe this is just like, however, what if you want to call it bias, you could like skip past that and just embrace people enjoying what they enjoy. But since then, since that time, since the initial release of Phantom Menace, there has been definitely, obviously, that backlash that we were talking about from after the movies started to come out and people started to see how bad they were. Nowadays, Phantom Menace sits at a critic reaction of 54% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oddly enough, 3.5 out of 4 stars from Roger Ebert and a 9.4 out of 10 from IMDb, and an audience reaction of 59% on Rotten Tomatoes, slightly better than the critic reaction, and a Metacritic user value of 6.2 on Phantom Menace. Attack of the Clones had Rotten Tomatoes a critic reaction of 62%, 2 stars by Roger Ebert, and 6.6 out of 10 by IMDb, and an audience reaction of 56% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then Revenge of the Sith, as we said, is overall received as the best film, which I overall agree with. A Rotten Tomatoes score of 79%, a Roger Ebert score of 3.5 out of 4 stars, and an IMDb score out of 7.7 out of 10, oddly lower than Phantom Menace, and a audience reception on Rotten Tomatoes of 66%. So, generally speaking, overall, not the most positively received films in the world, critically speaking, but kids like us grew up with these films, kids like us grew up loving these films. If you're me, I was obsessed with Star Wars. I think we both were at the perfect age for the prequels. For me in particular, I was not old enough or I was not at the point where I cared enough about movie critique to see anything as bad acting or bad writing or bad characters or anything like that. I just saw a bunch of lightsabers and aliens and spaceships and cool fights. So I didn't really care about that. In fact, Revenge of the Sith, as a kid, episode 3, was just point blank my favorite movie, period, at all, ever. Like, Obi-Wan was my favorite character. I wanted to be Obi-Wan for Halloween and get my face grafted onto Obi-Wan at those Disney World photo booths and whatever. And like, I remember when I was a kid with a unhealthy attachment to both Star Wars and Yu-Gi-Oh! I remember, just to like give you an example of my obsession with Star Wars, I remember in like second grade maybe, there was a new kid in class like partway through the year, and he was up in front of class, got introduced by the teacher, whatever, and then he sat behind me, And I immediately turned around to him in his seat, and I said, "Hi, I'm Cadden." "Hi, I'm Steven." "Oh, Cole's gone. Are you back?"
"I am back." "Continue from introducing yourself to this kindergarten child."
"Yes. I immediately turned back to him. I said, "Hi, I'm Cadden." "Hi, I'm Steven."
"Steven?"
"Steven."
"Oh, God. I hope this story takes a good turn."
Well, I guess so. "Hi, I'm Cadden." "Hi, I'm Steven." "Hi, Steven. Do you like Star Wars?" "No." "Do you like Yu-Gi-Oh?" "No." And then I said, "Okay." And I turned back around, and I was like, "All right, there's nothing more I can do. I guess we're not going to be friends." So, Steven, if you're watching, hi.
"Steven, if you're watching, I don't know you. Fuck you."
We went on to be friends. He was a nice guy in second and like third grade. He was a good guy. We went on to be friends. But that was how obsessed I was with Star Wars, is that I shaped my friendships or possible hypothetical friendships around whether or not I could talk to them about Star Wars.
There's no problem with that. That is the way that you should judge your friendships.
Fair. Is that how you shaped your relationship with people around you? Were you also obsessed with Star Wars?
I honestly don't think I ever really had that obsession for Star Wars. Like, I love Star Wars. I was obsessed with them. I loved all of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely don't think that that was kind of the catalyst for me making friends. I think I honestly stumbled upon the situations where it would be like, "Oh, hey, we're friends." And I'm like, "Hey, I want to go see Star Wars." And then somebody's like, "Star Wars, that's my favorite movie." And I'm like, I can't believe I didn't know this earlier. I just must be a terrible friend. And then we'd end up going to see Star Wars. But also, I think speaks to my age, is that Star Wars was not a huge thing when I was growing up. It was really big, especially when the Clone Wars came out. But by the time that I had gotten into kindergarten, all of the prequels had already come out. And I think that was kind of the biggest thing, is that I maybe had like a year or two where I talked about Revenge of the Sith and I'm like, "This movie's amazing. Why is the fight on Mustafar the most epic like superhero thing I've ever seen?" Because at this point, it was before the MCU. It was before like some of the better DC movies with like Nolan's Batman and everything. So I was just like, "Why is this the just most epic action adventure thing I've ever seen in my life?" And I think I only had about a year of that. So I think it was a lot more personal to like my family than it was to my friends, specifically with the prequels, though. Because again, they had already come out by the time I entered kindergarten.
Revenge of the Sith came out in 2005.
Yes. So it would have come out like the year.
Yeah, that period between the release of Revenge of the Sith and the beginning of the Clone Wars, either the 2D animated or the 3D animated version. Well, I guess the 2D animated version came out ahead of Revenge of the Sith.
To the 2D animated version came out in 2003 and is still, I believe, in my personal opinion, one of the best Star Wars properties ever conceived. I realize some people, if you guys listened all to our former Cartoon Network episode, you'll know how much I will stand up for Genndy Tartakovsky and his vision of Star Wars. Now, if he did a Superman, I'd probably still be behind it. But yes, there was a big difference between that 2D Star Wars coming out in like 2003 in the middle of 2 and 3 and the later Cartoon Network kind of 3D animation one, which came out like a good 6 or 7 years after Revenge of the Sith. And I think that a lot of where my peak Star Wars fandom would have existed would have been in those 5 or 6 years before the Clone Wars, kind of took off as an animated series. We were basically just left with the six best mainline movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That like period as when we were kids is, like you said, is like after all the movies that would come out until we were in high school, all the movies had come out and we either had games or TV shows or limited 2D animated series to sate our appetite for Star Wars until the sequels would start to come out. But yeah, that's at least for me when I became obsessed with Star Wars. And when I was a kid, the prequels were my favorite. Revenge of the Sith was my favorite movie, and I would rewatch the original trilogy, the original Tridge, a good amount, of course. But the prequels were always where it was at for me. And that's why we want to take this episode in particular to look back on not the critiques we could make of the prequels. Plenty of people have done that. No sense beating that dead Wampa.
Hold on. Yes. You know the Wampa was only in number 5. How dare you make some weird anachronistic bullshit statement when you know this is the prequel episode?
Beat the dead Gungan?
Yeah, that checks out.
We're not going to beat the dead Gungan by going back over the criticisms that everybody else in the world has made about the prequels. Instead, we're going to focus on what we enjoy about the prequels, because this is unquestionably nerdy. We talk about what we love on this show. And I thought we could do so by looking at each individual prequel movie, talking about what we love about each prequel movie, and then talking about what we love about the prequels overall. So if we want to start off with Phantom Menace, me personally, I think the most obvious piece to look at in terms of the big memorable imagery of Phantom Menace is Darth Maul. He's a great design, a great sort of like side physical threat villain, goes on to be much bigger of a character later on in Clone Wars in particular and other stuff, and gets a great in Phantom Menace itself, gets a great physical performance from Ray Park and a great voice performance by Peter Serafinowicz. Maul is just a great fun villain.
So this is kind of a Cole childhood lore thing, but I did meet Ray Park as a child.
Oh my lord, tell me everything.
I don't remember much, but there is a picture of Ray Park just kind of holding me on his shoulders.
Nice.
And it was basically at a Star Wars convention where a lot of people were like, but Darth Maul didn't talk. Like, so what's the use of like going to get Darth Maul's autograph? So
it's fucking Ray Park.
I know. So as of what my parents said, we were basically just at Ray Park's table, me as a toddler, and they just got to talk to him for like 10 to 20 minutes and just hang out with Ray Park. And yeah, I got a picture where he was basically just holding me on his shoulders.
Did he spin you around like a double-edged lightsaber?
I have no idea, but that would have been amazing.
It would explain a lot.
I mean, I think it would explain a lot, too. It explains just, you know, I don't know, how good I am with, you know, futuristic Star Wars label science and why you're a voice actor.
Yeah, true.
So maybe you needed to get spun around more. Maybe it would have helped your development.
Well, next time we hang out in person, you can lift me and spin me.
I say, don't worry, we'll have a group just so we can spend it faster. I would say we need to get the RPMs above 100. But,
Well,
I definitely think that Ray Park was a significant highlight, especially because out of all of the prequel villains, he just had the most physicality. I feel like Darth Maul, even though like he basically just got in about a 10-minute sequence in the very end, he was still, I think, the most lethal out of the villains.
I'm the one who kills anybody.
There is an argument to be made for Count Dooku, which I understand, but like out of swordsmen,
yeah,
I know Count Dooku is supposed to be like the best swordsman out of like all of the Jedi trained people. Darth Maul is just straight up better if you look at it. I think one thing that does make me really happy looking back on the Phantom Menace now is the fact that they had to slow down the fights.
Yeah.
That Ewan McGregor and Ray Park were just so in sync with each other.
Oh, yeah.
That they were going, like, light speed on these fights. And they're like, hold on, the regular, like, movie viewer would not be able to follow this.
Yeah. They got too good. Ewan McGregor set the fucking tone for how he would take the fight scenes in throughout this trilogy.
I would say the fact is, I think that may be one of the detriments and one of the things that I don't like about The Phantom Menace. And I know this is going to be one of the episodes that, like, you know, we're like, we want to speak about the positives.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, after seeing some of those videos from back then, I feel like it's kind of a double-edged sword there. Is maybe most people couldn't have followed it, but I wanted to see those faster fights. Like, if they could do a faster fight and just go all out for it, instead of, like, playing to the camera, I personally would have wanted to see that.
You could go on YouTube and watch the fight scene on 1.5 playback speed.
Nah, it's not the same.
You're right.
It's just not the same. But I think that, I really think that Ray Park and the choreography in the lightsaber fights, especially with the Phantom Menace, were just straight up better than the ones that you had previously seen in the original trilogy.
And oh, like, yeah, without a doubt.
If they had only gone that one step further, especially when you kind of look at the original trilogy and especially the prequels, and you're like, all right, George Lucas had full creative control over the prequels. If he had really gone into this fuck it, I don't care mentality and said, I'm making the movie I want to make it, I'm the creator of Star Wars and fans just watch it, you either accept my vision or you don't, I feel like we would have gotten those baller fight scenes. But I still think that they're a highlight that honestly The Phantom Menace did better than the original trilogy.
Oh, yeah. Like, looking at Duel of the Fates in particular, that fight sequence between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Darth Maul and all the other stuff going on with taking back the palace and Anakin going up to the drone control ship, whatever. The original trilogy gave audiences a scale of sci-fi and sci-fi action that we had never seen before, that nobody had ever seen before. Duel of the Fates did it again. And, like, Liam, we talk about Ewan McGregor and Ray Park going at it. Like, Liam Neeson gives it his all and does really well, but Ewan McGregor wants to murder Ray Park in that scene, and I respect him for it.
Yeah, there's just something about The Phantom Menace where I don't know how to describe it other than it feels like they may have held back for the people when they really wanted to take it further. So I'm like, it's not something that I can ever truly blame on the movie itself. I'm always going to give it the highlight, even though I know that it's kind of very controversial even now.
Yes.
I honestly just kind of would want to see what the movie would have been like just without, like, the audience reaction, you know? Like, if George...
It's like wanting to see the Olympics on steroids. You just want to see what people are really capable of.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of what we missed out on in terms of, like, how epic the fights would have been, how convoluted the story was. Also, another thing... Trade Federation. I know people don't like them. I liked the Trade Federation story. I didn't have that much of a problem with it.
Like, you enjoy, like, the political machinations of it and, like, control, balance of power between money and state and whatever?
Yes. I 100% enjoyed it. I honestly think out of all of the movies, I think that the first one probably did the political machinations best.
Okay.
Which I know is probably a very hot take, but I think that the political machinations were done best in the first one.
My mind for that goes more to Revenge of the Sith, because I feel like in Revenge of the Sith, it's more character-focused. But what do you like about Phantom Menace politics the most?
I would honestly say probably not the character focus.
Okay.
I kind of liked, I felt like the Phantom Menace did better in terms of like the process or the institution focus.
Yes.
And I felt like that was more of what I'd want to see if you were making a Star Wars movie political.
Uh-huh.
Looking back on them over the years, than really the character development inside of the politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this whole trilogy is George Lucas like getting more political in a very clear way and like voicing his concerns and critiques of American politics at the time.
Yeah, but I felt like it was much more character oriented in the later films. And mm-hmm. I just wasn't the biggest fan of that. I really enjoyed almost like this, oh, you're introducing this Federation, and basically all of the exposition he had to put in of here's how, you know, the Republic government ran.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that worked nicely. And again, Jar Jar would have been better if he was secretly a Sith Lord that would have been the villain of the sequel series.
Maybe still is. Just because it didn't happen on screen doesn't mean it's not true.
So it did actually happen on screen, and this is where I have to point out, sometimes the best Star Wars stuff is not what ends up on screen. For anybody who has not seen it, there is a Lego Star Wars special of basically all of the bricks falling apart and basically making these twisted alternate dimensions, where in one of these alternate dimensions, the ultimate villain is Darth Jar Jar.
I forgot that happened.
It's not a feature-length film, so I can't include it in like any of my rankings that I personally have. Eh. Is it better than the sequels? Yes, it's so much better than the sequels. Could it possibly be better than some points in the prequels and most of the other TV series? Yes.
Oh, then it's basically canon.
If it's not canon, it should be.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of praising physical performances and Jar Jar Binks, I feel like it's honestly fair to give some amount of praise to Ahmed Best, the physical performer and just the general performer, the actor behind Jar Jar Binks, because like the performance capture process behind him had never really been done before in a character like that. And we can all say what we will about Jar Jar as a character and overall performance, but like, to give praise to Ahmed Best, nobody had ever done that before. Nobody knew what to coach him on. Nobody knew like exactly what to tell him about how to perform, etc., etc. Like, this is 2 years before Fellowship of the Ring, let alone Two Towers with Andy Serkis coming in as Gollum. And to be fair, Ahmed Best should get a pat on the back. Ahmed Best should receive more recognition and praise for giving a new type of performance and finding his own way through it. And I'm glad he got to come back for Obi-Wan.
Look, I'm not going to start some sort of fandom war on the best kind of CGI motion capture character.
Yes.
Andy Serkis did great. Yes. What I will say is that Ahmed Best was never given the chance.
Fair.
To create that epic of a character. Like, I feel like Gollum had more emotional growth in each of his movies that he was in, Lord mm-hmm. of the Rings,
mm-hmm.
than Jar Jar had in just The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
That chance was taken away. If Jar Jar had only had the writing behind him,
yes,
then again, look at what the prequels could have become if the writing was behind Jar Jar.
Well, George Lucas had so much goddamn faith in Jar Jar as a character. Like, if you watch back on like the behind the scenes type footage of George Lucas talking about the process of making it and like the process leading up to filming, like, he had so much faith in Jar Jar as a character, faith that nobody in the world shared with him. Like, I remember a clip in particular of George Lucas talking about how if Jar Jar can work, then the rest of this trilogy can work. Everything relies on Jar Jar because he's the funniest character we've ever had. And if and it's a new type of technology, that's a new type of performance. If Jar Jar can work, everything can work. And maybe that was true, because if one didn't work, the rest did not.
I think truly, if you guys take anything away from this episode, Jar Jar Binks was the linchpin of an entire trilogy.
Yes.
Other than that, let me think of other positive things. Ewan McGregor's casting, fantastic. Yes,
of course.
The kid who played Anakin, also pretty good casting. Liam Neeson, fantastic. Having Samuel L. Jackson just being a Jedi with a purple lightsaber because he said, fuck it, I want purple. Amazing.
The actor for young Anakin being Mr. Jake Lloyd.
Jake Lloyd did a great job. Natalie Portman did a great job as Padme. I think the CGI behind the pod racers, given the time that the movie was made in, was good CGI.
Oh yeah. I think it stands up today, honestly. Like, I rewatching these movies for this episode, like, the pod race is one of the key points I have on my positives for the Phantom Menace. Like, with the new music, the no music, the music cuts out, and all you hear is the rush of the race and the engines and the pods. It's a terrible spectator sport if you're looking at it from in-universe, but like it's from the audience perspective, for us on the movie-going side, it's great.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot more positives for The Phantom Menace than what people think of looking back on the movie. I really think that the issues that come with The Phantom Menace are issues that are entirely brought up throughout the trilogy. It's the fact that there are some things that are never brought up again from The Phantom Menace that should have been brought up, and because they weren't, and they weren't kind of, you know, expanded upon and kind of changed, like Jar Jar, I definitely think there could have been more done with, like, the prophecy of the Force and, like, Anakin's, like, midichlorians.
You want more midichlorians?
I think that there was not enough prophesying in the original trilogy. I think we got a lot of that in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
I just wish that there had been a bit more. I think that was something, there was enough in number one. There wasn't enough in number two, and then there was some in number three, but it kind of just felt like, you know, why couldn't this be consistent across three movies and just give us more, but slowly? So I feel like we're getting more into my issues with two now, but looking back on it, I think that for the things that specifically were only encapsulated in the time span of the first movie, I think we're done really well.
Yeah.
I think just looking back on the first movie, when you take the trilogy as a whole, makes it look weak because it doesn't look like it set up the rest of the trilogy well enough. And I think that honestly could be an issue more with the other two movies than it was with the first one.
Well, Cole, before we move on to the rest of the movies, I do have to be honest, you're the only person, the only living soul I've ever heard complain about there not being enough talk about midichlorians.
I wouldn't say that it's too much talk on, I wouldn't say it's not enough talk on midichlorians. I just feel like, and this is getting more into the second movie, again, it's really hard to just go with things that I like instead of taking everything together. I felt like there was a jump between the first movie talking about this prophecy and the midichlorians, and then the third movie talking about the prophecy and the midichlorians, and then the second movie just not talking about it.
Oh yeah, it's never brought up again. It's only ever talked about in one movie.
That's my problem with it, in terms of there not being enough. I think it's one of those things of like, I think that's
kind of abandoned.
Yes, that is my issue with it, is that it is something that basically detracts from the first movie only because it is abandoned in the rest of the prequels.
they don't stick to their guns on it.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing, again, with, like, Jar Jar. There's things that were set up in the first movie that if they had stuck with their guns, I feel like universally the first movie would be held in higher regards.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the reason that I see the first movie higher in my book, it's still in, like, the bottom half of movies because they've come out with some great Star Wars movies.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I see it a bit more positively is because I see what could have been if only they had stuck to their guns.
Mm-hmm. Well, rather than stick on just the first movie, we'll move on to Attack of the Clones. But finishing up with our Phantom Menace discussion, one or two other points that I found enjoyable in a rewatch of Phantom Menace. The first time I've been back to Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones in fucking years, I think. Pernilla August's Shmi Skywalker, I thought was there's not a ton to it, but I thought she was just a nice performance, a great kind mother who gives Annie one light of hope in an otherwise awful life. The characterization of Queen Amidala I thought was really cool. She's strong, she's forward, she puts herself into action. I thought that was a cool characterization of her. And then little baby Anakin kills a bunch of people on the Trade Federation droid control ship at the end. Just a mass murdering 12-year-old.
Hey, but that's the best age for it. I mean, look, I think we can all agree that Anakin's mass murdering of the Trade Federation is much more acceptable because they were the villains.
True.
Than what we're going to see in two movies when he just takes out an entire fucking elementary school of gifted children.
Yeah. And sand people children.
Eh.
But let's get to that movie. Cole, any particular points you want to start off in talking about Attack of the Clones?
It is hard for me to find positives in this movie.
I also found this. I had to focus on, like, very particular moments in finding positives for Attack of the Clones. I didn't see, like, for Attack of the Clones, it was harder to find overarching, like, yeah, this is cool throughout the movie. It was like, yeah, that scene was cool.
I think that the introduction of multiple Jedi and, like, them being badasses.
Sure, yeah.
Is part of mine. So, like, for me, Windu's killing of Jango. The introduction of Kit Fisto when all the Jedi drop into, you know, the Colosseum in Geonosha.
Plo Koon. Yeah.
Yeah, Plo Koon, all of them. It's great because it's expanding the universe. I love that part.
Mm.
I think that Ewan McGregor still did good in this movie. For some reason, it's been so long, but I imagine Obi-Wan with a goatee in this movie.
Yeah.
Or there's some weird hairstyle with Obi-Wan in this movie that just doesn't make sense.
He's got a mullet. It's a mullet.
And he didn't have it in the third one?
Yeah, that is one overarching thing that I did enjoy about this movie. Obi-Wan's got great hair.
I mean, that could be it. I mean, Obi-Wan, I feel like, is just kind of cool across all of them.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like,
I'm out of a character.
So, you know, Kamino was nice.
Yes.
I feel like Tamara Morrison did a great job at Jango.
Mm-hmm. Another familiar face in Star Wars throughout.
Yeah. I feel like the kind of backstory of the clones was a bit of a letdown. I think, personally, looking back on it, if I were to take my opinion, having not seen the Clone Wars, I think I would be a bit disappointing because I'm like, oh, there's just supposed to be some clones. Interesting. But I guess without seeing the Clone Wars, like, you kind of could suspect, oh, something bad's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's this whole conspiracy of Sifo Dyas having commissioned this fucking whole army for the Republic and nobody knows how or why.
I mean, so I think, yes, having that conspiracy, I think that worked out well. Again, it was just one of those things of, you had to put, especially back then, like, longer than a 2-hour movie was just kind of a struggle. Now we have, like, 3.5-hour movies.
Uh-huh.
But I think that having the Clone Wars series kind of bolsters what we got with the whole Kamino segment. So I like the story of the Kamino segment. I like the introduction of all the different Jedi. Obi-Wan was still cool. Count Dooku as a character was still great.
Yes.
I just wish that Christopher Lee could have kept up with the fighting. Like, I
think he's old.
I think
he's been old forever.
He did a fine job. I just wish that, like, there was somebody like fencing at light speed that could have just made him seem lethal.
Well, all the sword fighting, all the lightsaber fighting, that was not Christopher Lee. That was a stunt double with Christopher Lee's face tacked on.
I mean, I know. I just, again, it goes back to kind of that thing of, in no way did I think that the best swords fighter and like all of the world, Count Dooku, was more lethal than Darth Maul.
Yeah.
So I think that's just another ding on the Clone Wars more than the Phantom Menace. Because I feel like if you had kind of taken up this thing of like, oh, Qui-Gon was only good at sword fighting because of Dooku, which is the only reason that Obi-Wan and Anakin are good, and that all comes from Yoda. I think that, again, there was a bit of a detraction there of, if you're going through basically this lineage of the best swords fighters or lightsaber duelists of the Jedi Order all fighting each other in the third act of this movie, why isn't it more epic than The Phantom Menace?
Yeah, that is fair. It is less cinematic than Duel of the Fates, for sure. But I do agree, Christopher Lee's Count Dooku is awesome throughout. That's another more overarching positive about the film. Christopher Lee is a gentleman and a badass. He's always great. He's in bad things, but he's always great in them. And even like the character of Count Dooku, I liked, because like when he's trying to convince, like, he's the head of this whole conspiracy, but when he's trying to convince Obi-Wan to join him and like, we can defeat the Sith together, he seems genuinely torn between both sides. Like, he had me convinced that if Obi-Wan said yes, I'll go with you, maybe they would have gone up against the Emperor together and actually, or Palpatine together, and actually, maybe he was serious. Maybe he, because like, he used to be a Jedi, and like, he talks to Windu like an old friend, and he's a character who's not overtly evil, even though he is played by the king of playing villains.
They pick the right actor, which I think was one of the strongest points of this movie, was that having Christopher Lee be Count Dooku. I don't think there was really anybody better. And I think, again, they gave you the inklings in this movie. It only got better with the series in between 2 and 3, especially with the Clone Wars, because you look at it and you're like, all right, you know, he's also this political leader of the Separatists. And I feel like you get some sort of dichotomy between him being a Sith apprentice and also being basically this rebellion political leader.
Mm-hmm.
The only makes the character more fleshed out and three-dimensional. But again, with the small amount of screen time that you have in the movie, Christopher Lee got as much across as he could. So I think that Christopher Lee was a highlight. Personally, I think I'm going to stick with that as kind of all of the positives of this movie.
Nothing else you can draw on.
I think I'm going to go with the introduction of all the different Jedi, Christopher Lee, and the Kamino moment, I think, being kind of the best fight scenes, or at least best story development in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think those are the only things that made me, like, smile and happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some other points I enjoyed, like, going back to the conspiracy that Dooku is at the head of, like, the bug assassination scene, the attempt on Amidala's life. At the start, he's cool and it's creepy and it looks great, and like the worms are like slithering through the shades of the blinds with the light of Coruscant coming into the windows. That's just a cool look to it, of them creeping up onto her bed, and then Obi-Wan diving headfirst through a fucking window off a skyscraper to grab the assassination drone is awesome. The moment of, you don't want to sell me death sticks. I don't want to sell you death sticks. You want to go home and rethink your life. I want to go home and rethink my life. That's just great. Don't do drugs. I like Dex. I like Dex in his diner. I like Obi-Wan's big alien, four-armed alien friend. I think Ronald Falk is fun in that role. I like Dex.
Okay. Dex was pretty fun.
And I like his mustache.
I think I'm going to pull out one more hot take. One of my favorite scenes is the line of Anakin when he's trying to woo Padme, and he says, everybody should know this line, I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere.
It gets everywhere.
Not like here. Here, everything is soft and smooth. Single greatest line in a Star Wars movie ever. Nothing beats it. The rest of the movie pales in comparison. That is the greatest delivery of a line I've ever seen in a Star Wars movie. Uh-huh. Hayden Christensen should have won the Oscar for that. He also should have won the Golden Globe for it.
Okay.
I realize Emmys are just for television, but they should have replayed that line just once in Star Wars The Clone Wars so that he could have had the opportunity at the Emmy.
That is a hot take. That is a take hot enough to char your skin and lock you in a robot suit for the rest of your life, yeah.
I don't think that you're anywhere near the correct temperature on this. I think that this is going to the surface of sun with an iron mask around your face, kind of hot. Everything.
It's a blow up Alderaan kind of hot.
It really is.
Yeah.
Everything about the Anakin and the Padme in this movie
is bad.
The only reason that that line is Oscar-worthy is because of almost the Sharknado films. You look at something that is so unforgivably bad.
Yes.
That you're like, this may be the best bad thing that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably how it's looked at. The common populace will probably agree with you on that.
Yeah. I'm going to stick behind it. I'm not going to say any more on this movie. It is, honestly, I don't think that I could make my way through Attack of the Clones without being in a group of people. I would personally not choose to watch Attack of the Clones by myself.
Fair.
Just to watch a Star Wars movie.
No.
I still think it's better than the sequels, but it's definitely worse than every other one.
Well, I like the sound design and the seismic charges when Obi-Wan is chasing Jango and Boba. It's a nice big boom. I like
the explosions.
Yeah, it's a good one. But you know what else is good? Is Revenge of the Sith. Unironically, it's a good movie.
You're right. Unironically, great time. I have seen a terrible YouTube version called Star Wars.
All right.
Honestly, still kind of okay.
All right.
Mustafar, I think, is the one thing that I would kind of point to for Revenge of the Sith. Mm-hmm. Is kind of peak cinema.
Yeah.
The fight at Mustafar was just epic. It was straight up just kind of every child on the edge of their seat in the movie theater saying, hold on, this is Obi-Wan versus Anakin. These are both the good guy and they're trying to kill each other. What's happening?
Yep. I mean, it is what the trilogy has been leading to from the start. And it does not disappoint at all. It's great. It's over the top. It is like bursting with cinematicism. That's a word.
100% a word. I think Ewan McGregor's acting, especially in that point of it today, it makes me tear up when he's just like, Anakin, you were like a brother to me.
Even though you were like a father to him in the last movie, which is weird switch around.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you were meant to destroy the Sith, not join them.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about Mustafar, like the third act of that movie, just is what I had come to expect of like, this is what a third act of a movie should be.
Yeah.
And even though I've seen a lot of movies since then, I would still say that the third act of Revenge of the Sith is still one of the strongest.
Fair.
Just because it literally is that action adventure, just like what you'd come to expect of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that the Anakin and Padme relationship was definitely better in this one than it was in 2.
For sure.
I'm not going to say that it was an overall positive on the movie.
Fair.
I will point out, Anakin's hair in this movie
Fabulous.
1,000 times better.
Oh, yeah. No weird little rat tails.
Exactly. But I think that was also just kind of part of the whole you're still a Padawan thing.
Yeah, when you become a Jedi Knight, they cut it off with a lightsaber, yeah.
Grievous, I liked.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't think that Ian McDiarmid and whoever voiced Grievous were as strong of villains.
Really?
As Christopher Lee.
Really? Grievous, I have always liked Grievous. I think he's always been, like, physically one of my favorite Star Wars villains, especially in Clone Wars. But Ian McDiarmid, not your favorite?
I mean, look, he's always been great. I've loved him since, I mean, he was in the originals.
Yes.
He was also in the movie called Dirty Rotten Scoundrels as the butler. So, no, I've loved him since the 80s. I don't know. There was just this, I guess it felt like just such a stark, when I look back on it now, such a stark kind of difference in the portrayal of the character when you're looking at Emperor Palpatine versus the Darth Sidious
mm-hmm.
aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just kind of seemed a bit jarring to me.
Hmm. Okay. Sure. Sure. He definitely becomes more like over the top villainy when he becomes Sidious.
Yes. I think that he excelled when he was just kind of Palpatine, you know, telling Anakin the story of, like, you know, Plagueis and how he killed his master kind of thing.
Oh my god, yeah.
I think that's one of the highlights, honestly, of Palpatine's character, is just that mm-hmm. scene when he's talking about the story of the Sith apprentice and the master.
He's bragging about his victory without telling Anakin he's bragging.
And I wish that they had kept with that personification more. Because mm-hmm. you kind of touched on it. I feel like there was a bit of a disconnect once he basically got his body electrified.
Yeah.
In terms of how, like, cartoonish he almost seemed.
Mm-hmm. Did you prefer the cartoonish, or did you prefer the composed politician, Chancellor Palpatine?
I preferred the composed Chancellor that almost okay. seemed somewhat sadistic, where he was, like, seriously, he was bragging about, like, his backstory of how he became yeah. a Sith Lord.
Yeah.
That is what I preferred, especially because I felt like if he was that serious, it could have put some emphasis on Hayden Christensen
mm-hmm.
to play a better Anakin. Because, like, Anakin was still great, but I think mm-hmm. we all realize that, like, the acting with Anakin was still somewhat of a weak point in comparison to everybody else. Like, we're not saying that the acting's completely awful. It's just saying when you look at everybody else that was in that movie, Hayden Christensen was just being out-acted.
I've not seen Hayden Christensen in anything else. I've only ever seen him in Star Wars.
You're missing out on the great film. I will give Hayden Christensen all the credit on the movie Jumper.
I figured you would say Jumper.
Holy shit. Love the movie Jumper. That's kind of like my guilty pleasure summer movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just love it.
I've not seen Hayden Christensen in anything else. Similar to Jake Lloyd, I hate the amount of hate both of them got for their performances, because they've just been completely torn apart since these movies came out. Jake Lloyd's fucking life was ruined beyond repair. I don't know. I hope he's doing okay. But, like, we at least get to see Hayden Christensen come back and get celebrated now, get cheered on stage when it was announced that he'd be coming back for Obi-Wan, and everybody gets excited to see him in Obi-Wan again. Is Hayden Christensen a good actor? Well, I'll say this. I think, to go back to the celebrating part of this episode, I think this movie is Hayden Christensen's best performance as Anakin. He's nice. He's having fun. He's actual friends with Obi-Wan, and you can actually believe the shit that Ben Kenobi was talking about in A New Hope when looking back on Anakin as a great friend and a great Jedi, whatever. You can actually believe it in this movie.
Look, and I'm then, just like saying said, that he got out-acted.
He did. I'm not disagreeing with you there.
I'm not saying that he did a bad performance in this movie, because I'm going to agree with you there. Between Attack of the Clones and this one,
yes,
absolutely far and away, like magnitudes, orders of magnitude improvement. I would say Anakin was just fun to watch in this movie.
Yeah,
I just think that the slight points where he started to pull away wasn't his fault. I think it was I think it was the fact of where the scene took it. And I think that is kind of to the blame of when Sidious and Anakin both went to this kind of more cartoonish side on the third act, when if Palpatine had been a bit more almost calmly sadistic, I think we would have got a different Anakin. That only just would have given that slightest edge to his part, but would have pulled up the movie dramatically.
Okay, because I think, I'll disagree with you there. I think Hayden Christensen only gets to his best in that third act. Like, when, like the point at which Palpatine reveals that he's a Sith Lord, and Anakin goes back and tells Windu and the others, and Windu tells him to go back to the temple. And from, I feel like from that point on is Hayden Christensen's best acting in the movie. Again, I do agree that, generally speaking, he does get out-acted because he's surrounded by amazing actors the whole time. But I feel like that's the best. Like, the scene when he's in the temple and Padme is in their apartment, and they're, like, looking out towards each other, and they can't see each other, but they're both thinking about each other and the weight of each other that's on either of their shoulders. And Hayden Christensen visually is killing it. He's not saying a goddamn word, but you can just see the torture on his face. And then later on Mustafar, after he's killed all the separatists, he's torn apart by it, and he's crushed by what he's done, and he's like staring out over the lava before Padme gets there, and he's got the yellow eyes, and he's tortured, and he's terrified, and he's terrified of what he's done, but he knows he's locked in now. I feel like that's Hayden's best acting in this movie. He's got other nice parts, like the being friends with Obi-Wan and having fun at the start with the battle sequence over Coruscant, and just having, like you said, just a nice relationship with Padme at this point. They're not yelling each other, creeping each other out. They're just like being a nice couple, and he has that nice moment at the start when he gets back to Coruscant and Padme reveals that she's pregnant, and he goes through the full spectrum of emotions of terror and shock and joy. It's great. He's great.
I can see that. I feel like one thing that, again, it's really hard to just talk about the positives in these movies without just talking about everything.
It's fair, but we've got to focus on the positives. That's what we're here for.
I think the only other, like, huge positive that I can think of is just the ships and just the opening sequence with them flying in the war. Is that one of my favorite parts of the movie? Yes. One of my least favorite parts of all time in the Star Wars universe? Mostly because of the mission and getting all 10 mini kits in the Star Wars Lego Star Wars game? Yes.
Fair.
I could rant all day about the toughest missions to get the mini kits on. That being one of them. I hate that mission.
Yeah, Battle over Coruscant is amazing. Fantastic opening to the movie.
I think that kind of covers all of the big positives that I can think of in the movie. I know that there have been deleted scenes that I have seen, which I would also count as a positive, wishing that they had been in the final cut, even though I know,
like, what?
Long movie. There were just some more deleted scenes that had kind of made this implicit kind of argument in Anakin's mind that Padme was cheating on him with Obi-Wan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There were some deleted scenes between Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan and Natalie Portman's Padme where they did have at least more of just kind of this like emotional, you know, Obi-Wan cares for both of them and wants them to both be good. But mm-hmm. some things that like Anakin basically in his basically what I would say is almost like a Sith mind control that he doesn't realize is happening. Mm. He could see that as them kind of going behind his back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like it was something that was very clear why he'd think that in the theatrical cut that we got.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen some deleted scenes that would more kind of support that argument and give the reaction and the acting in that third act, especially once they hit Mustafar, mm-hmm. just a bit more weight.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a lot of, again, kind of the things with the story, is that a lot of the acting choices I feel like could have been improved with just the story to back it up. I feel like this was always the issue with the prequel movies, and like nowadays I don't think people would have a problem with. I feel like people would go to see a 3-hour Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. I feel like Star Wars fans would, maybe not so much a general audience type of thing.
Maybe. But I feel like there were definitely moments where I'm like, if I only got like somewhere between 2 to 5 minutes of dialogue throughout the movie that kind of supported like the mental, you know, emotions that these mm-hmm. characters were feeling in certain scenes,
mm-hmm.
I felt like everything just would have pulled together more cohesively.
Yeah.
And I guess that's something too, is like Hayden Christensen's acting in this third movie, I feel like was explicitly better
mm-hmm.
because I think the writing in the third movie was better.
It is. There's less fluff to this movie.
Yeah. So that is my opinion on Revenge of the Sith. I can't really think of any more definite mm-hmm. positives other than I think even if you're tearing apart this movie, like we are, positives, negatives, trying to focus on the positives, I wouldn't say don't worry about... I would just say don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, to me, is still a pinnacle Star Wars movie of I would rewatch this movie and just say I had fun. This makes me feel like a kid who's just looking at how badass the Jedi are.
Yeah.
And everything about this to me is a love of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like if you're looking at this as a movie, you can do that because you watched it 100 times. But the smile on my face when I watch Revenge of the Sith is the biggest out of any of the 3 prequel movies. And that's not going to change. No matter what problems I have with the movie, any things I would change differently, whatever. I'm not a filmmaker. I'm free to have the opinions, but I could never change it. This movie just makes me smile.
Yeah. Agreed. This is by far the best of the prequel trilogy. From start to finish, it's a good time. The strong opening with Battle over Coruscant is great and gets us into where the characters are at in a great way. General Grievous, I think, is a very fun design for a character and a very memorable character. Not the best execution in how he's like constantly running away, but that is true to his character, that they say he's a coward, etc., etc. Hayden Christensen, again, best performance. I do like Obi-Wan's lizard friend when he's chasing down Grievous. And then, the close on Mustafar is epic and cinematic, and it's the acting is dialed up to 11 from everybody there, from after the point that Anakin has killed everybody and he's feeling the weight of his decisions up until the end when Obi-Wan cuts Anakin's legs off and he's screaming about the prophecy and how you were supposed to destroy the Sith, not join them, and you're my brother and I loved you. Yeah, it's great. I will never... If I ever trash on Revenge of the Sith, it is with love.
It is, yeah, it is only with love. I was going to say, we only trash on it because it's just kind of that thing that you do late at night, right? Where it's just you kind of go down your rabbit holes. You're like, how could we make something perfect better?
Mm-hmm. Nobody hates on Star Wars like Star Wars fans.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of, especially with like, 4, 5, and 3, I think, are the big movies. I think six sometimes is in this boat, but like I look at 3, 4, and 5 as perfect Star Wars movies, not because they're perfect movies. You can find issues in these movies.
For sure.
But it's that sense of these are the memorable Star Wars movies that will constantly remind me of the Jedi and constantly have me dressing up as Star Wars characters for Halloween, going to the Star Wars park at Disney, showing these to my children, and like making sure that your family would see all of these for years and years ahead. Like, those are the perfect Star Wars movies, not from a film standpoint, but just from a Star Wars standpoint. Like, they are the epitome of just hope, I think. Even though 2 out of those 3 are some of the darkest Star Wars movies that exist, minus Rogue One, which we will cover at some point.
I like to talk about Rogue One.
But, yeah.
Pop quiz, what's your watch order? What order will you show your kids Star Wars? Release order, episode order, the other one where you switch it around some.
I will show them Rogue One first.
Rogue One first.
Followed by 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, Solo, just for some fun. And then that's it.
Okay. Generally, I go release order.
You would go 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
Where would you put Rogue One and Solo?
Rogue One, probably after 3, before 7, maybe? Yeah. After 3, before 7, and then Solo, probably after Rogue One. I just feel like that's where those fit the most comfortably.
I think so. I think Rogue One, I think my argument would just be, I need to show my kids something so negative in the ending of Rogue One. And I just I just kind of need to preface that with them before they watch A New Hope and just be like, this is what those people died for.
We're going to feel bad after this, but right after we'll feel really good.
Yeah, I'm like, you're not going to feel good watching the end of this movie, but afterwards, I want you to understand all of the hope that like I had as a kid, out of all the family had as a kid, what they saw is the superheroes of the world. And I'm like, Rogue One was the sacrifice to basically make this better world with these superheroes, which are like, you know, the top tier of my childhood. I guess any last words on the prequels? I know we kind of just went into a general Star Wars ranking, but
yeah, I feel like the general Star Wars talk is apt. You know, we talk about why we're talking about the prequels because, and the positives therein of the prequels, because we love Star Wars. Like, if we didn't care about Star Wars, if we weren't Star Wars fans, we wouldn't talk about the things that we love from these very heavily trashed movies. But overarching across the prequel trilogy as a whole, just like a few wrap-up points of stuff that I enjoyed. We mentioned Ewan McGregor. He's everything that a young Obi-Wan should be. He's great. You see him leading into the Obi-Wan, the Ben Kenobi that we see in Episode 4 very well, even though, why does he age that quickly? That's a problem for another time. Not his fault, not Ewan's fault. Ian McDiarmid, I think, is great throughout the trilogy. In episode 1 and 2, he's good. He's perfectly serviceable. He's clearly having fun with it. And then number 3, the opera house scene, every scene he shares with Anakin, every scene that he has where you can tell he's holding something over everybody else and he's doing it in a great way. And then you were less of a fan of the cartoony side he went into, which I can see because the Chancellor Palpatine is so much fun with the quiet villainy of it. But I feel like when he knows he's won and he's brought Anakin over to his side, that's just his excuse to let go of the performance of the politician and just to have fun in his victory, and where he's cackling, fighting Yoda, etc., etc. So, Ewan McGregor, Ian McDiarmid, amazing mainstays of the Star Wars franchise at this point. Of course, another mainstay of the Star Wars franchise, we have to talk about John Williams' music. Duel of the Fates, Anakin's Dark Deeds, Battle of Heroes. Nobody does it like John Williams, and there will never be another composer like John Williams. There will never be another soundtrack like Star Wars.
I think, yes, John Williams is a big player in this. Star Wars would not be the same without John Williams.
Truly.
I think you're missing out on one other piece of continuity, though.
Go on.
Something that I feel like we'll get into much later and whenever we cover the sequel trilogy.
Yes.
But the fact that George Lucas was a continuity. George Lucas, up to this point, had written all 6 Star Wars movies that had been released.
Mm-hmm.
He had directed 4 of them. He directed 1, 2, 3, and 4. 5 and 6 weren't directed by him, but he wrote all 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you were to equate that today, even though it wasn't getting written by someone, but Denis Villeneuve for the yes. Dune trilogy, I feel
it's
like...
It's Denis Villeneuve, by the way.
Jesus, I thought his name
it's
was Denis.
It's Canadian. It's Canadian French, not Spanish.
All right, well, Canadian French, what do you say, Denis Villeneuve?
Denis Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve. I am so sorry for mispronouncing that name. But I feel like that's part of the reason that we look back fonder on the prequel trilogy nowadays. Mm-hmm. Is because we still see its issues,
mm-hmm.
but we also see that it was one creative mind behind the entire thing.
For sure.
And that he was basically just going balls to the wall on his idea.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the struggles that we'll see looking at the sequel trilogy. Yeah. But I definitely think that no matter how much people could have disagreed with George Lucas's take back when the movies were first released,
mm-hmm.
Even though it seems like most of the initial reviews were pretty positive, I still think that that's one of the reasons that we still see the movies as, you know, overwhelmingly, you know, positive, or, you know, at least okay with them. There is no, like, hatred.
Yeah.
And I think that's because we at least got something consistent from mm-hmm. George Lucas. And I think mm-hmm. when you have a franchise that you've already built a trilogy off of and you only want to expand, consistency is key.
Fair. Yeah. I think, like you said, that is a big complaint of the sequel trilogy, is that there was no real plan going in. It so heavily feels like so many choices were made not out of a love of Star Wars, but what would sell the best. And, of course, George Lucas is no stranger to the money that is made off of Star Wars, but it's clear that he made so much of the prequels with a love for them and with a picture of the world in mind. And that brings me to my last positive point of the overarching points of the trilogy, is the image that we get of Star Wars. We get diverse looks at the universe, at the galaxy far, far away, in the original trilogy, with starting off on Tatooine and then going into Yavin 4 is a completely different place, and then, you know, Cloud City is completely different, and the Death Star is its own thing. But we didn't get to see much of the civilizations that exist within the world in places like Naboo and Coruscant and Mustafar. Not that Mustafar shows much of a civilization, but it's a new place, it's a new image of the universe. And a lot of that would not be... We would not have a lot of those images without the prequel trilogy, and without great CG design of these worlds, and with great costuming by Trisha Pegar. But yeah, gives us an image to this franchise and universe and galaxy that we love.
I think that the biggest message from that is George Lucas had a committed fan base,
mm-hmm.
and he was not afraid to fail. I think that, I mean, we can debate, you know, like Jar Jar, some things. There were some things that he was kind of afraid to put in. But I think overall, these 3 prequel movies, you could see the passion in them.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I mean, just think of normal things that we encounter day to day. Like, you can look back at, like, your parents' home cooking.
Mm.
There's just a difference in quality when you know that somebody is putting their passion and their heart behind it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that overall is the big plus from the prequel movies, is that George Lucas put his vision and his heart behind these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And if he hadn't, we wouldn't have gotten all the Star Wars things that they've basically been pumping out over the past decade and a half.
Yes. George Lucas, if you're watching, which you're not, but if you were, you, sir, are unquestionably nerdy.
100%. Also, George Lucas, if you're watching,
come on the podcast.
I am going to have to put out one endorsement for it's Crazy Boris Productions on YouTube. Because I love this. He did do a short on The Mandalorian and Grogu with a biblically accurate George Lucas. I just need you to look it up and watch it and then figure out that that man should be one of your newest Star Wars animators. Again, not a paid endorsement from this podcast at all. Just a fact of George Lucas, you being a biblically accurate version is one of the most badass things I've ever seen that is completely tangential to Star Wars ever. So go watch it.
Now I need to see this. But in order to see this, we need to wrap up. Cole, do so.
It is time. Time to not kill them all, just to leave. So hope all of you have had a good time hearing about us talk about the prequels. I am Cole Browning.
I am Gavin MacArthur.
And this has been Unquestionably Nerdy. May the Force be with you all.